At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Okay. Please be seated for the session.
So I'm told counsel wants to see me as the jury's coming over. Why don't you come up to sidebar? All right. Can we bring the jurors in, Tony, please?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
You are unmuted.
Okay, thank you.
Judge, while we're waiting for the jurors, just for the record, I think Ms. Little had an opportunity to review the redacted exhibits from yesterday, and I don't think there was any objection to them.
That's correct.
All right, thank you.
Would all rise, jurors enter.
Having anything to do before the Honorable Beverly Cannoni, the Justice of the Superior Court, holding in debtum within and for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, give your presence, and you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This court is in session. Please be seated.
All right, good morning again, counsel. Good morning.
Good morning, jurors.
I have to ask you those same three questions. Were you all able to follow the instructions and refrain from discussing this case with anyone since we left yesterday?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Were you also able to follow the instructions and refrain from doing any independent research or investigation into this case?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Did anyone happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case since we left yesterday?
No.
No or support. All right, Mr. Brennan, your next witness, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. The Commonwealth calls Connor Keith.
Good
Come on, sir, follow me. Now step up, raise your right hand. Thank you.
Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear the evidence given to the court and jury in the case now and hearing should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Brennan, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury, spell your last name for the record?
Sure, my name is Connor Keefe. The last name is K-E-E-F-E.
Mr. Keefe, where do you work?
I work for the Massachusetts State Police.
What's your position with the Massachusetts State Police?
I'm assigned to the Norfolk District Attorney's Office.
Are you a trooper?
Yes.
When did you first start beginning working as a Massachusetts State Police trooper?
2017.
Did you go to basic training?
Yes, the academy.
How long was the academy?
Approximately 6 months.
Did you have any further training after the academy?
On the job training?
Yes.
Yes, in various specialties.
What's your role at the Norfolk County District Attorney's Office?
I am assigned to the homicide unit where we investigate homicides, unattended deaths, suicides, stuff like that. And I'm also a digital forensic examiner at the District Attorney's Office.
Did you have a role in investigating this case?
Yes.
Were you a assigned investigator in this case?
I wasn't the main investigator, but I was involved, yes.
Did you deal with any of the digital forensic evidence?
Yes.
Specifically, regarding the digital forensic evidence, did you meet anybody to obtain a phone?
Yes.
Who did you meet?
I met Jen McCabe and Kerry Roberts.
When you met with them, did you have to obtain anything from them?
I obtained a consent form and their cellular device.
After you received their devices, where did you bring them?
They were brought back to the forensics lab located at the Norfolk District Attorney's Office.
And what, if anything, did you do with either or both phones?
I conducted a forensic extraction on those devices.
An extraction, is that a copying an image of the phone?
Yes.
Is that different than analyzing the phone?
Yes.
Were you involved in analyzing Kerry Roberts' phone?
No.
Were you involved in analyzing Jennifer McCabe's phone?
No.
Was your role limited to attaching it to Gray Key and doing the extraction?
That is correct.
And did you do that?
Yes.
In addition to the phone extractions, if you take us back to January 29, 2022, were you involved in going to 34 Fairview Road in Canton, Massachusetts?
Yes.
Do you know about what time you went there?
Approximately 5:30.
What was your role at 34 Fairview Road that evening?
I was asked to by my supervisor, Lieutenant Brian Tully, to assist in processing the scene at 34 Fairview Road in Canton, Massachusetts.
When you arrived at 34 Fairview Road, was there anybody else there?
Yes.
Who was there?
Lieutenant Tully, members of the Massachusetts State Police CERT team, the Special Emergency Response Team.
Are you part of the CERT team?
I am not.
Did you see what the CERT team was doing?
They were conducting an area search very front of the lawn and the street or road in front of 34 Fairview.
Did you have any role in that actual searching of evidence?
No, I did not.
What was your role, limited role, that night?
To process any evidence that was discovered during the search.
When you say process the evidence, can you explain briefly, what does that mean?
Sure, I was had evidence bags, and if a piece of evidence or an item was found, I would place that item into the evidence bag.
And why would you do that?
To secure it.
How would you become aware if there was a piece of evidence found?
The CERT team would alert the supervisor, Lieutenant Tully, or myself that there was an item or a piece of evidence, and Lieutenant Tully would then take a photograph of it, and then I would secure the piece of evidence in a bag, evidence bag.
Do you know if those photographs were timestamped?
I believe so.
Your role was to put the evidence in the bag and return it to the evidence room?
Correct.
Did you do that?
Yes.
If I could begin, I'd like to show you on the screen a series of exhibits. If we could start with exhibit 74, please.
Exhibit
Trooper, do you recognize that item?
Yes.
What is it?
That is a black Nike shoe.
Did you see that item that night?
Yes.
74A, please. 74B. Thank you. Is that the same sneaker?
Yes, sir.
After you were alerted to that sneaker, did you place that sneaker into an evidence bag?
Yes.
Did you bring that item with you today?
Yes.
Do you have gloves?
Yes, sir.
Do you want the lights on, Mr. Brennan?
Please, thank you, Your Honor. And Ms. Gilman, you can take the photo down, please. With the court's permission, I'm going to move this piece of evidence, item into evidence.
Okay.
Let me ask you a few questions before you open it. Could you stand and show that bag?
Yes, sir.
There's red tape on it. What's that for?
To secure the bag closed.
If the bag is open, is it then retaped?
Yes.
Do you write on the outside of the bag?
Yes.
Why do you do that?
To memorialize the date, time when the evidence was collected.
Could you open the bag and show us what's in it?
Yes, sir.
With the court's permission, can he show the items?
Yes.
Thank you. Trooper, is that the same item that you found that night?
Yes, sir.
If you could place it back in the bag, I'd ask this to be marked as an exhibit.
All right, any objections, Gene? There is
no objection.
Sir, you mentioned there's writing on the outside of the bag.
Yes.
What type of information do you write on the bag?
Date, time, location, who is collecting it.
The time that you write on the bag, is that the specific time the item was found, or does that represent a different time?
That could represent a different time.
And why would that be?
If you're processing multiple things at once, you're bagging things at different times, then when you seal the bag, that can be the time that is annotated on the bag.
Can the item be found before the time on that bag?
Yes.
Would you ever write a time later than when the item was found?
Yes.
I'd like to move now to Exhibit 75, please. And preferably 75A, please. Do you recognize that item?
Yes.
Is that one of the items you bagged that night?
Yes.
And if we could turn to 76A, please. Do you recognize that item?
Yes.
Is that an item that you bagged that night?
Yes.
Do you have both of those items with you?
Yes, sir.
Could you produce those, please? Ms. Gilman, you could take that down, please. Thank you. 570.
Yes, sir.
Oh. With the court's permission, I'd ask the trooper to open the bag and show the jury.
Yes,
sir, on those items that are stickers, did you put the stickers on them?
I did not.
Do you know where the stickers come from?
I do not.
Do you know if these items are ever sent to anybody other than your evidence locker? Are they ever removed and given to lab personnel and technicians?
Yes.
Do you know if that was done in this case?
Yes, I do.
Inside that bag, is there just two pieces or is there another piece in that bag?
There is another piece in the bag.
When you put the taillight pieces in that bag, how many pieces did you put in the bag?
I put two.
Do you know if the other piece in the bag is a piece that broke off, or do you know how that arrived there?
I do not.
Could you just pull out that other small piece and show the jury as well? Is that smaller piece consistent with the same color as the two bigger pieces?
Yes.
Is it consistent with the same material?
Yes.
If you could put that back in the bag, please. I'd move this into evidence, please.
Okay. Thank you, Bert.
Okay. So, Mr. Brennan, I leave it to you and the witness how you do that part.
Yes. Sir, on the small chip piece, you don't know how it became chipped?
I do not.
I'd ask you to remove that chip. I'd like you to safely secure it, bring it with you, and bag it when you leave.
Yes, sir.
And then I'd like to introduce that exhibit.
78. So we're going to mark the little chip. Ms. Gianetti asked to mark that.
For identification.
Yes.
Okay, then we're going to submit that for identification. So the small chip that I asked you to secure.
Madam Court Reporter has an envelope for that.
Thank you very much.
Exhibit 78.
Thank you.
Exhibit BB for identification.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Trooper, we have one more bag of items to go through?
Yes.
Could I have Exhibit 73, please? Sir, if you could look at Exhibit 73 on the screen, do you recognize that?
Yes.
And what is it?
A piece of clear plastic.
Is that piece of clear plastic, when you saw it, was it at ground level?
Yes.
Did you bag that item?
I did.
When you bagged that item, was there another item along with it in the same bag?
Yes.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
So I'm showing you a photo. You recognize what's in it?
Yes.
What's in it?
The piece of clear plastic.
Is that the second piece in the bag, separate from the last exhibit?
Yes.
Fair and accurate depiction of how you saw it that morning?
Yes, sir.
I'd move this into evidence as an exhibit, please.
Okay. There's no objection, Mr. Unetti?
There's no objection, ma'am.
Exhibit 79.
With the court's permission, could we show Exhibit 79 to the jury?
Yes.
Gilman, would you be able to close? Thank you. You recognize that item, sir?
Yes.
And did you bring those two items with you, the past exhibit and this exhibit?
Yes.
Could you produce those, please?
Yes.
Are these different in color than the last pieces you showed?
Yes.
With the court's permission, could the trooper show these pieces?
Yes.
Exhibit Thank you, Trooper. I'd move these items in evidence.
No objection, Your Honor.
All right.
Exhibit 80.
Thank you.
Thank you, Trooper Keith.
Thank you, sir.
All right, any questions, Mr. Iannetti?
Please, Your Honor, thank you.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Trooper Keefe, you testified that you received the cell phone of Jennifer McCabe and of Kerry Roberts?
Correct.
With regard to the cell phone of Jennifer McCabe in particular, you had her sign what is called a consent form, correct?
That's correct.
What is a consent form?
It allows the trooper or law enforcement to, with the owner's consent, we are able to conduct an extraction of the device.
Okay. And on that consent form, there is a description of the item itself?
Yes.
In this case, it would have been an iPhone 11?
Yes.
And there also is an identifier with regard to a specific phone called the IMEI number?
The International Mobile Equipment Identifier.
Okay. And that would be included on the form as well because it identifies the specific iPhone 11 that Jennifer McCabe had, correct?
Correct.
The password was provided on that consent form?
Yes.
And the form was signed, correct?
Yes.
By both Jennifer McCabe and by you, correct?
Yes.
And there was also a second trooper that would have signed the form as well?
That's correct.
With regard to the timing of the signing of that form, Jennifer McCabe dated it February 2nd of 2022?
Yes.
You also dated it February 2nd of 2022, correct?
Correct.
Jennifer McCabe did not list a time, but you did, correct?
I would have to look at the consent form.
Okay, so your memory, you don't remember what time you indicated or if you indicated a time, but looking at the consent form would refresh your memory?
Yes.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
Now, I just ask you to read that silently and then look up at me when you're done, Trooper. Having reviewed that form, does that refresh your memory as to whether you indicated a date and time?
I did, yes.
And what was the date and time that you indicated?
It was February 2nd, 2022, 12:08.
And that would have been 12:08 p.m.?
Correct, 12:08 p.m.
The document that I handed you is not an original, correct?
No, it's not.
Does it appear to be a precise copy of the original, however?
Yes.
May I offer that into evidence, Your Honor, please?
Is there an objection, Mr. Brennan?
No, subject to redaction.
Okay. So don't put it up on the...
I will not.
Exhibit 81.
Now, Trooper Keefe, as of January 29th of 2022, you were colleagues in the same state police unit as Michael Proctor, correct?
I was.
At that time, was the unit called the CPAC unit or was it called Norfolk County Detectives?
I don't recall when it changed.
Okay. It's been called both, correct?
It has.
As of January 29th of 2022, there were only 10 troopers in the unit, including supervisors, correct?
I don't know.
It's a small unit, is it not?
Relatively small.
Within the CPAC or the Norfolk County Detectives, every case that comes in is assigned to one particular trooper as the lead investigator in the case, correct?
That is something that a supervisor would do, not me.
And have you been assigned as the lead investigator in other investigations?
No, not a homicide investigation, no.
You have not yet?
No.
The lead investigator is the trooper who is responsible for the case, correct?
Yes.
Michael Proctor was the lead investigator for the investigation into the death of John O'Keefe, was he not?
Yes.
If somebody asked within your unit while this case was going on, whose case is it or who has that case, your answer would have been Michael Proctor, correct?
Yes.
The two of you have worked cases together in the past, correct?
A few.
You've worked on this case with Michael Proctor, correct?
Yes.
And in fact, within your work on this case, you actually partnered with him for certain assignments within the case, did you not?
You'll have to be more specific.
Sure. So for instance, on October 21 of 2022, you and Michael Proctor interviewed Sarah Levinson together, correct?
No, I don't recall that.
If I may just have a moment, Your Honor.
Okay.
Remember interviewing Sarah Levinson on October 21 of 2022 at 12:20 p.m. at the Norfolk DA's office? Is that your current testimony?
Yes.
Okay. If you saw a copy of that report, would that refresh your memory?
To an extent.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I've placed a document in front of you. I just ask you to read that silently to yourself. Look up at me when you're done. Thank you. And Trooper O'Keefe, just so we're clear, I'm not going to ask you any questions about the specifics of what Sarah Levinson said, so you don't have to brush up on that.
I'd just like to refresh. Take
sure,
a look, sir.
Go ahead. Having reviewed that report, does that refresh your memory as to whether or not you participated in an interview of Sarah Levinson with Michael Proctor on October 21st of 2022?
Yes, I don't recall the specifics, but...
So when you say yes, is it your current testimony that your memory is refreshed that you were actually there?
Yes.
Okay. And the two of you would have participated in that interview together, correct?
Yes.
But you did not write the report, correct?
No, I did not.
Michael Proctor wrote the report, correct?
Yes, he did.
He was the lead investigator writing the report, correct?
Yes, he wrote this report.
He chose the language to use in that report, correct?
I did not have any input on how he wrote this report.
Right. You had no input. You weren't standing over him while he was typing it, correct?
Correct.
Now, other examples of, and actually, let me take that back from you if you don't mind. Let me approach Judge.
Yes.
Thank you. You're welcome. Other examples are the reports on the videos that you, let me start by saying this. You, or asking you this, you retrieved videos from both the Waterfall Bar and Grill and CF McCarthy's, did you not?
That's correct.
You and Sergeant Buchanick retrieved the videos from CF McCarthy's, correct?
Yes.
But lead detective or lead investigator Michael Proctor was the one to analyze the video and write a report on it, correct?
I would have to see that report, sir.
Sure. I may approach.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. And again, if you'd read that silently to yourself and look up at me when you're done. Having reviewed that report, does that refresh your memory about Michael Proctor being the one to write the report on the analysis of the waterfall video?
Sir, I only obtained a copy of the surveillance video. Right. I did not do any analysis on the video.
That's my question. It was Michael Proctor who did the analysis, correct?
Yes.
And that, it, by the way, I said waterfall. Is that C.F. McCarthy's there, or is that waterfall?
This is C.F. McCarthy's.
Okay. I meant C.F. McCarthy's. He was the one to review that video, correct?
Yes. Again, I only got a copy of the surveillance video.
Sure.
I did not do any analysis.
And with regard to the waterfall bar and grill, that was another circumstance where you and Sergeant Buchanek were the ones to retrieve the video, correct?
Yes.
But again, lead investigator Michael Proctor was the one to analyze the video and write the report on it, correct?
Yes, I would have to see that report as well, sir.
Okay. Now, another member of your unit was Trooper David DiCicco, correct?
Yes.
Within your unit, did Trooper DiCicco have a nickname for a first name?
Objection.
May we approach? Trooper, in terms of the troopers that were in your unit as of January 29th of 2022, which members of the unit had the least amount of time in the unit at that time?
I don't recall.
Were you one of the newer members of the unit?
As of January of 2022?
Yes.
Yes.
Trooper, Michael, then Trooper Michael Proctor had more experience than you did as of January 29th of 2022, correct?
He could have. He'd been on the job longer.
Okay, well, if he had been on the job longer, then certainly that means that he did have more experience, correct?
It depends.
You attended the autopsy of John O'Keefe on January 31st of 2022.
I did.
And with regard to other members of your unit, you were the only one to attend that autopsy?
Yes.
That was done at the medical examiner's office?
The medical examiner's office in Sandwich, Massachusetts.
In Sandwich, Mass. And it was Dr. Irene Scordi-Bello who performed the autopsy, correct?
Yes.
Had you met her prior to that day?
No.
Had you spoken to her prior to that day?
No.
Did you know before the autopsy was performed that your former colleague, lead investigator Michael Proctor, had discussed the case with Dr. Scordi-Bello without telling us what you knew of what was said?
Objection.
With regard to Dr. Scordi-Bello's knowledge of what the state police theory was of what happened, did you have to explain that, or was it your understanding she already knew what your theory was?
Objection.
Sustained. You can ask that differently
now. What, if any, conversations did you have with Dr. Scordi-Bello about what your unit's theory was about what happened to John O'Keefe?
There was no theory.
Okay. You did not provide any theory to her, correct?
I did not provide a theory.
You learned at the autopsy from your observations that John O'Keefe had two black eyes and a swollen right eye, correct?
Yes.
You also learned that there was a small cut above his right eye, correct?
Yes.
And there was a small abrasion on the left side of his nose, correct?
I would have to reference the report for the exact words.
Okay. If I may have a moment. May I approach, Your Honor?
Okay.
Do you want this one back?
Oh, please, thank you. So I've placed another document in front of you. Just take a look, read it silently to yourself, and look up at me when you're done. And I would direct your attention to the second page for the question I just asked you. Having reviewed that report, Trooper, is your memory refreshed as to whether you observed a small abrasion on the left side of John O'Keefe's nose?
Yes.
Now, was this the first autopsy that you had attended, or had you attended ones in the past?
I cannot recall.
It could have been the first one?
Most likely not.
When you're attending an autopsy as a member of the CPAC unit or the Norfolk Detectives Unit, you are expecting that the medical examiner is going to examine the body, correct?
Yes.
And you're there to witness that examination, correct?
Yes.
At the end of the examination, you are expecting that there will be a determination as to cause and manner of death, correct?
Objection.
Not.
In this case, when the autopsy ended, you left the medical examiner's office, correct?
Yes.
When you left, your understanding was that the cause and manner of death was still undetermined, correct?
Objection.
You knew when you left that Dr. Scorti Bello had seen the scratches or bites or injuries to John O'Keefe's arms, correct?
Objection.
You knew when you left that in your presence, Dr. Scorti Bello had seen the injuries to John O'Keefe's arm.
Object to the line of questioning.
Sustained.
May we approach?
Okay. Jurors, feel free to stand up.
Were you watching Dr. Scorti Bello as she was conducting the autopsy?
Yes.
Did she appear to be looking at John O'Keefe's body?
Objection.
It's the same thing, just ask a different question.
What direction were her eyes facing when she was examining John O'Keefe's body?
I don't recall.
Okay. Was she looking at the ceiling, Trooper?
She was doing her job conducting the autopsy.
And in order to do that,
the body.
I'm sorry?
She was looking at the body, I assume.
Thank you. And looking at the body, you saw her looking at the body, correct?
Yes.
And looking at the body included an arm, correct?
Yes.
And it was the arm was not covered up during the autopsy, correct?
No.
It was open for you to see, correct?
Yes.
And you saw the injuries to John O'Keefe's arm, correct?
Yes.
You didn't see any bruising on his arm, correct?
I don't recall.
You didn't notice any obvious broken bones, did you?
I'm not a medical expert.
And it is common practice for the state police to attend autopsies when there's an undetermined death, correct?
Yes.
It is not at all common for the defense to attend an autopsy, correct?
I've never experienced that.
Right. And there was no defense attorney or defense expert at the autopsy of John O'Keefe, correct?
Not when I was there.
You were there, correct?
Yes.
And there was nothing that prevented you from giving input to the doctor as she examined the body, correct?
We don't give input. We give the facts that we know so far in the case.
Okay. Well, giving the facts is giving input, is it not?
It's not input.
Okay. Did you talk to Dr. Scorti Bello during the autopsy?
Yes.
And you gave her information, if you don't want to call it input, correct?
Yes.
And at the end of it, you left without her ruling it a homicide, correct?
Objection.
I have nothing further.
Anything?
No, none. Thank you.
All right, you're all set, Trooper.
Thank you, guys.
So, jurors, this break I'm going to take now. All right, we're going to take a break. The lawyers and I have some work that we have to do, so it's a little bit longer break than we normally take, and it's a little bit earlier, but we did get coffee for you, so we'll take a recess now for the next half hour, maybe a little bit. I want counsel to stay.
All rise for the court, please. Close your notebook, follow me.
Jamie's with my argument.
You're going to switch your seat, right? Seated.
So I want to talk a little bit more about what we talked about at sidebar. And I read the decision from Maryland, just cursory while we were waiting for the witness. And that was a March decision. And I can't stress enough that this should have been brought up before today. So I'll hear you about your concerns, Mr. Alessi. I'll hear the Commonwealth's response. Then I'll go finish reading everything else you gave me. So what are your concerns about Jessica Hyde? I don't know if she's Dr. Hyde or what, but I remember she testified the last trial, so you have transcripts.
Understood, Your Honor. I first want to just get the evidentiary basis. This is straightforward judicial notice. There are two separate decisions which require two separate...
One's a Massachusetts case, so that's easy enough.
Okay, so and that's a shell.
It's an SJC case, so yes.
Yes, okay. So now to the Maryland case. So that's governed by Massachusetts Rule 39A, and that is records of courts of other states or of the United States. The Act provision is the records and judicial proceedings, and of course a court is a judicial proceedings, of a court of another state or of the United States shall be competent evidence in this Commonwealth if authenticated by the attestation of the clerk or other officer who has charge of the records of such court under its seal. So I have with me, Your Honor, that State v. Herrera, Maryland case. I have the certified copy with me from the clerk.
All right, so we can mark that for identification.
Thank you, Your Honor. May I approach?
Yes.
CC for ID.
Okay, thank you.
So, assuming Your Honor determines that the seal is the seal, it is a mandatory under the rule that it shall be competent evidence, it shall be in evidence. And to the extent the Commonwealth seeks to argue relevancy or materiality, that argument is precluded, Your Honor, and the best evidence of that preclusion is the immediate section below in Rule 39, which is notice of foreign law, which is not this, but it says there, the court shall upon request take judicial notice of the law of the United States or of any state, territory, dependency thereof, or of a foreign country, whenever it shall be material. So the drafters of this rule knew how to put in a qualification or condition when they introduced materiality in B, but they didn't do it in A.
Okay, so focus on what it is you think Jessica Hyde should be prohibited from testifying about.
Oh, Your Honor, I am not seeking to prohibit her from any testimony under this rule. What I want to do is to have it admitted in evidence, have it published, and question her on what she presented to the court in the Maryland case, what was presented, her report, because it was deemed not reliable. And that is what...
In one area, right? One specific area?
You can call it front
the decision.
Area. Right, right. Oh, yeah. Just what's in the decision. But there's two parts to that decision, two areas. It's FLH, frequent location history.
Right.
But what the court also got at was Apple source codes, that she didn't have the Apple source code.
Nobody in the country has the Apple source codes, right?
Point exactly, Your Honor.
So what is it that, so you want to put in her report and question her about
a proceeding in Maryland? I need to know exactly what you're asking me to allow.
If I could give you the answer, Your Honor, I will explain it. It's a very short answer.
Okay.
What I want to do is, with regard to her 227 timestamp and her anticipated testimony on that, where she uses a tool, Cellebrite, to determine and come to a conclusion about that timestamp, she is not using Apple source code to find out where that's located specifically in the phone and what it means. She is using a surrogate to do that. And I want to cross-examine her on the topic, using this decision to say, in Maryland, you tried to do the same thing with regard to FLH. You tried to use a surrogate approach and make an opinion about whether that is, in fact, what's in the phone. She can't do it, and that means her testimony on 227 is not reliable. I'm not looking to exclude it. I'm looking to cross her on her reliability for the conclusions I anticipate she's going to make on 227.
So if she is not asked about that, then what?
Oh, if she's not asked about the 227, I want to think about it, but I'm 99% certain I am not going to pursue that at all.
Okay, what do you say, Mr. Brennan?
This is an attempt to try to malign a witness with something that's wholly unrelated and not relevant to what she's going to testify to or the basis for her opinion. It is not a law that is admissible. It's an opinion. It wasn't even about a specific case. It was about a peer review. And so in a Daubert hearing, the court did not allow testimony on significant location. That's not the case here. Tried to conflate the argument saying it has something to do with Apple 227. There is absolutely no basis for that argument. They want to say that another court rejected something about you, therefore the jury should reject you. There is no relationship between what she is going to testify as a basis and that opinion. That opinion did not say she was wrong. It said that it was not admissible under Daubert, unrelated. Nobody has the Apple source code. No expert can testify about Apple source code. It's only owned by Apple. And so using the words like surrogate is a way to try to cheapen her testimony in front of the jury. This here, what he said, I really can't follow him. I don't understand, other than he's trying to draw some type of relevance and materiality. There's none. This is not a denouncement. She hasn't been found incredible. There's nothing about her methodology that has been rejected by a court. This is on significant location, and although she looked at it, that's not part of this opinion whatsoever. And so because another court didn't allow something under a Daubert, has nothing to do with this case, nothing.
And what is it that you expect her to testify to, Mr. Brennan, regarding the 207 stamp? We did not have this issue with Mr. Whiffen, right? This was not raised with Mr. Whiffen.
Oh, it was. The 227 timestamp.
That was raised, but this... What was problematic in Maryland? The same thing that was problematic in Arrington.
That's correct, Your Honor. It wasn't raised because Mr. Whiffen has not been Daubertized with regard to Apple source codes. And if I could, Your Honor.
Okay.
Mr. Brennan has made a relevance argument. He keeps anticipating my cross, which he has incorrect, by saying it's not relevant. That doesn't go to the admissibility in my cross. I'm entitled to cross her on her reliability. And if I could, Your Honor, in the State Herrera decision, if Your Honor would look at page 3, please, at the bottom, the paragraph, it says, in assessing the reliability of an expert's methodology, I get to do that on cross. It's not limited to a Daubert hearing. Every expert can be crossed on their reliability of their methodology. And lastly, with regard to the Apple source code, if Your Honor would please turn to page 6, the last paragraph, it says, the issue raised in this case stems from the fact that Apple's algorithms are proprietary and the expert did not have access. That's exactly the situation here and what I want to cross her on. So in conclusion, Your Honor, the fact that how she tried to get around the Apple source code, her methodology in the Herrera case, she got advertised on because it wasn't reliable. That's exactly what I want to cross her on, is her reliability, how she's trying to get around them. In this case, it's just basic cross-examination.
You can see the plan to dehumanize somebody, daubertized, to use a term to suggest some type of conclusion that has no basis in fact, is an attempt to just dehumanize her and limit her testimony and credibility without any basis in fact. In that case, it did not deal with the search of a tab and a suspended state in Safari. It didn't deal with the timestamp. It was an entirely different issue. By their analysis, if a expert goes into court on a motion, on anything to do with data forensics, and the court says that issue is not admissible, they should be impeached when they go and talk about a totally different issue in forensic data analysis at another case. They have not shown any evidence that this issue has anything to do with her effort in the timestamp. They just used the word methodology. Her methodology was questioned in an opinion in a different court. Has nothing to do with her opinions here. What information do they have that her methodology in this analysis has been rejected by any court? What evidence do they have that the methodology used in this case is unreliable or improper? They don't have any. In fact, they called an expert themselves in the last case who tried to provide what he believed to be methodology, and they presented that. They proffered that evidence as reliable. No different on this subject. Herrera case is a totally different subject.
Your Honor, first of all, as the court has noted, the first trial is the first trial. This is this trial. I wasn't at the first trial. The most important probative aspect, Your Honor, is I don't want to have to give away my entire cross in this argument.
No one's asking you to. I'm not asking you to.
There is parts of Ms. Hyde's slide that go to location. There's a good part of her slide presentation. I don't want to depart from the 227, but the good part of her slide presentation that she's going to present is on location. It is with regard to health data steps. So there are certainly aspects directly relevant. Here is the issue with the 227 in addition. There is, for her methodology, she's claiming a certain conclusion and opinion about the 227. There is no peer review. There is no article that she can cite to support her methodology to come to the conclusion that the 227 timestamp, one, doesn't exist anymore, or two, doesn't mean that the search occurred at 227. That's what she's opined on in her reports pre-trial, and that's what I anticipate she's going to opine on when she takes the stand. I'm entitled to cross her on that. We can't be saddled, it's irrelevant what our witnesses said in another proceeding. It's what this witness is going to talk about in this matter, and I'm entitled, and my client's entitled to have me confront this witness on what she's going to testify and her methodology. So my point is, Your Honor, this decision, how do you impeach an expert? But one of the fundamental ways you do it is, and I don't mean to dehumanize her, I won't even use the term daubertize anymore. She's been deemed unreliable. Attorneys who do experts all the time, that's the verb you use to shortcut it, but I won't use it. I have no intention to dehumanize her. What I intend to do is to impeach her on her reliability. So in conclusion, Your Honor, the Herrera case, she was deemed not reliable. That's competency. You, in any expert that's been deemed that, you get to attack that. If the Commonwealth believes the case is not relevant, if Ms. Hyde believes it's not relevant, let Ms. Hyde defend that on the stand. Let Mr. Brennan make that point on redirect. But I can't have my client's constitutional right to confront her on the very subject matter she's going to testify on by anticipating what I'm going to provide for cross. I've given it, and I respectfully submit, Your Honor, this is basic cross of an expert witness, particularly when their methodology on data forensics has been deemed not reliable by a court. And one part is the location she has in her PowerPoint she's going to testify.
Do you intend to introduce that, Mr. Brennan?
It's not significant locations. There are locations in the database that develop the opinion that the timestamp for 227 is not related to the search. They're conflating the issue. She has not been deemed unreliable. It is the issue of the significant locations by that court that they found insufficient. There's no opinion from a court that she's an unreliable expert, and this is how they're going to distort it. Invoking the Constitution and invoking the client's rights has nothing to do with the analysis, that this is a totally separate subject, or an opinion simply wasn't let in a different court out of this jurisdiction. It wasn't this opinion, it wasn't this methodology for the opinions that she's going to offer in this case. And so if you look at the case, it is a totally different related report, different related item. It's as if a reconstruction expert went into a court and attempted to give an opinion about a medical diagnosis, and the court wouldn't allow that medical diagnosis in. In another court, in another jurisdiction, they would not be able to be cross-examined that in some court, there was an opinion they offered that was deemed inadmissible, unless they were talking about the very same methodology and the very same point. This has nothing to do with her opinion whatsoever. It's just an attempt to try to endorse the defense's attempt to suggest she's not credible by hiding behind the shield of a different judge and distorting the fact that it's two different methodologies, it's two different issues.
One last word, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. He just said credibility. This isn't a credibility issue. This is a reliability. This is the essence of what experts do. You have to show that your methodology is reliable. It's a red herring to bring up credibility. The court opinion.
And this is the equivalent of a superior court opinion, right? It's not an appellate decision.
It is, Your Honor. It is the equivalent. I respectfully don't think that the level of the court is at all relevant. Any court, unless you get it overturned on appeal, then this would be a different matter. But this is the this is a valid case. And even if it wasn't, it shall be in evidence. So there's two issues here. And I think the Commonwealth is conflating that. The question first for the court is this admissible? Can it come into evidence? To me, that's a non-issue. Rule 39 says, ipso facto, yes, as long as I've got a certified copy. So it is in evidence. I don't know why we're perseverating respectfully on whether I can question her on something that's going to be in evidence about her. Final point, Mr. Brennan incorrectly says that this wasn't about her. The final sentence, the decretal section on page 7 says, accordingly, defendant's motion to exclude expert testimony regarding the significant location data obtained from the forensic cell extraction is granted. She's the only expert, and her name is mentioned throughout this opinion. It's all about Ms. Hock. And I'll conclude my last point, Your Honor, where I started. And that is Ms. Hyde's methodology with regard to her PowerPoint. You heard Mr. Brennan's answer. He is going to include, he has included in her PowerPoint, locations, steps, etc. It's exactly what was at issue here. The 227 timestamp, she has no, and this will be developed further on cross, she has no peer-reviewed article to say that how she is determining that 227 timestamp should not be in the data. She has nothing to support that, just like she had nothing in this case with regard to data forensics. Final point is, if the Commonwealth believes that this is irrelevant to what Ms. Hyde did, let them come back on redirect on that. I shouldn't, in anticipatory, have my cross-examination struck before I even get to pursue that with the witness. And I believe once I pursue it with the witness, it will become evidently clear that it's a proper basis for cross-examination.
All right, and Mr. Lessie, have you thought about if the Commonwealth does not get into the 227 timestamp, whether you think you're still entitled to do this?
My answer is I would be entitled, but I would say this. If they don't get into 227, I won't go after it. I won't pursue it. I won't pursue use of this opinion.
We necessarily would have to on some basis, because in order for the witness to explain to the jury her opinion that Ms. McCabe did not delete any Safari browser searches, she would have to identify the search, where it is in the databases, and how she knows that it wasn't deleted by a user. The same with the second part of the phone calls, but if I could avoid talking about 227, I would, but it is necessary for the basis of her opinion. There's just no way around it. And again, this is something that after a defendant expert may or may not testify, could be addressed at that point. There is no burden on the defendant. I'm not being presumptuous, although there was a offer of proof earlier on similar evidence. But not knowing the court's wisdom on whether I'll be entitled to rebuttal, I do not want to lose the opportunity to address points that were made in the opening that have absolutely no basis in fact and have not been proven in any way to this point in the case.
So I asked earlier whether the defense intended to call Mr. Green, and you believe that you do, right?
Your Honor, we have not made a decision on what data forensics expert we're going to call, but if I could just 10 seconds.
Okay, but then answer my question after your 10 seconds.
I will.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.